Hello and welcome. Tonight we're going to venture into the wonderful world of criminal law, which is interesting and exciting and kind of sad on a lot of levels. Before we do that, let's do a brief review. Last time we spoke about intellectual property law, where we talked about copyrights, patents, and trademarks. And remember, we talked about their definitions and our the elements that each has to have, the trademarks and patents and copyrights, are critical aspects of our modern economy. Why? Because we want to be able to preserve creativeness and incentivize people to come up with brand new ideas. Remember, copyrights allow you to have rights in expressions and in literary works and art and music and things of that nature. Software is a big area of copyright law, as we talked about the last time, allows you to be able to preserve those rights. Remember, you have to have that little C circle around it to be able to understand or have some kind of declaration that it's a copyrighted work. Remember, that little C is no longer required pursuant to that convention we discussed, but it's a good idea to have because one of the things you have to do to be able to make sure your rights are protected is be able to register it with the Federal Copyright Office. By doing that, with that little C there, you help to illustrate to the whole free world, even if it's not required anymore, that you want to have your rights protected. And if you write the great American novel or produce a great YouTube video or something of that nature, you may want to copyright it because of that fact that you can then maintain your control and royalties over it. Patents are processes or machines that you create, combination of materials, step-by-step procedures that you do. That's a process that you can maintain intellectual property rights. And lastly, trademarks are logos or identification, things like the Golden Arches, things like the Nike swoosh, things like the Colonel Sanders logo that you have. Those are all things that identify that product. Most sports teams have their logos trademarked because they're valuable, their identification on that basis. And lastly, we discussed the AMN Records versus Napster case, whereas where does that line come between being able to properly utilize rights that you have versus being able to abuse that right. So they talked about with these peer-to-peer networks, whereas it would be constituted as a fair use of the copyright to be able to share a CD with a friend and say, oh, listen to this, isn't this great music? A CD that you rightfully purchased and purchased the rights. When you do that on a computer platform where that sharing goes viral, as the court indicated, then guess what? That is not a fair use according to the law. And as a result, these peer-to-peer networks were shut down. They still exist and they're still out there, but they are not operating legally under the copyright laws. So just be aware of that. Okay. Tonight, we're going to dive into the wonderful and exciting and interesting world of criminal law and how we protect our society from those who might want to do bad things against us or our property. We're going to talk about three areas. We're going to talk about the structure and purpose of the criminal law. Why do we have criminal law? We're going to talk about the theories of criminal punishment. And lastly, we're going to go into what are the common law felonies and what's their meaning? Felonies were the worst crimes that you could commit. And then we're going to do our case, which is a very interesting but rather unsettling case. Like so much of the criminal law, that it is something which is of great interest, but often very sad and very unsettling, because it involves mistreatment of other human beings. That's one of the reasons why we have the criminal law. Well, let's jump right in, and we're going to talk about the criminal law. What is the criminal law defined as? Well, it's the body of law that defines offenses against the community at large, regulating how suspects are investigated and charged and then tried, and establishing punishments for convicted offenders. So it does multiple things. Primarily, it says, what are those offenses? It regulates how you investigate and charge and try offenders. That's called criminal procedure. We'll get to that in a minute. And establishes the punishments for those who are convicted pursuant to that process, pursuant to that procedure, of that wrongdoing. The overall criminal justice system is defined as the collective institutions through which an accused offender passes until accusations have been disposed of or assessed as accurate, and then the punishment is inflicted and concluded. What does criminal law do? It's the branch of law that defines crimes, establishes punishments, and regulates the investigation, prosecution, and trying of people who are accused and committing crimes. The criminal law is both substantive, as we said. This case, this conduct is prohibited as murder or as arson or as any other crime. And then it also has criminal procedure. How do we try somebody? How do we investigate that person? What are the proper rules for arresting them? Who has jurisdiction to try them? How do they get tried? How many people sit on a jury? All those things are called criminal procedure. Substantive law is the actual crime itself, a definition of what constitutes that conduct and what the penalty is. Under the penal law in New York State describes what the crime is. It is the substantive law. Criminal procedure, on the other hand, describes the process and rules by which the crime is prosecuted and justice is administered. And under New York State law, that is the criminal procedure law. Okay. Let's discuss a little bit further the difference between substantive criminal law and procedural criminal law, because they are different. Substantive criminal law defines the crime. It discusses and outlines the conduct that constitutes the crime. And it also sets out the punishment that is prescribed for that crime. It is a substantive criminal law that defines the crime and the punishment you get for that. So it tells you what are the elements of murder, what are the elements for burglary. It describes what the conduct is that there's being prohibited, and then says, if you do this, you're going to get this punishment. It will tell you what the punishment duration is. You get 25 years, you get life imprisonment, you get 3 years, you get the death penalty. All of those things are contained within the substantive criminal law. In New York State, the substantive criminal law is contained within a statute. It's a codification of the criminal law throughout the course of the ages. It's called the New York State Penal Law. Now, for criminal procedure, that establishes the procedures, the process for the implementation and enforcement of the criminal law. It is the process by which justice is administered in the event that someone who committed those crimes that are defined in the substantive criminal law is brought to justice. Criminal procedure is concerned with the legal rules that have to be followed in order to properly adjudicate that crime, the steps taken to investigate whether or not that person is the right person being charged, how to apprehend that person in the event that the investigation shows that that is the person that should be charged with the crime. How do you charge that person with the crime? How do you prosecute that person for the crime? And how is the conviction levied and the sentence given to that individual who violates that substantive criminal law? Criminal procedures describe how a murder trial must be conducted, rather, how a jury gets charged, how the many days you have to prosecute the crime, who gets investigated on that, how an investigation gets conducted. It's a very big area of the law. We are concerned in our nation with constitutional protections of every person who gets charged with a crime. Remember, you have a presumption of innocence under the United States Constitution and under the Constitution of the state of New York, both. You have both belts and suspenders there that protect you for how the administration of justice goes forward, because we want to make sure that people are presumed innocent, that they have the right to fight charges brought against them by the government. And remember, you get charged because where does sovereignty reside? It resides in the people. So when you get charged with a criminal offense, it's the people versus the defendant. It's not the government, it's the people. And in New York State, that criminal procedure, all those outlines of the process by which we make sure that justice is administered is contained in the criminal procedure law. It's a New York State statute. Now, the criminal law is a product of the common law. Crimes have been occurring as long as they've been people, sadly, and the common law outline most of the elements of what criminal conduct is. So if you were murder is the intentional killing of a human being with malice aforethought. That is a common law definition that you have. And what happened was when we created the United States, we codified, that means we put into statute, these common law principles under which the criminal law was prosecuted. And we put that in statute in the New York State penal law. You also have provisions of the United States Code that also provide for, excuse me, criminal law as well. But most crimes are under state law. And as a result of that, it's codified in the New York State penal law. Before you had New York State, you had a series of laws under which the common law jurisdiction, they did it by precedent, stare decisis, what was the previous way that we administered justice to this person for this crime. They defined the elements of the crime under the common law, and you had to be prosecuted under those elements. Today, we do it pursuant to statute. We have that common law now codified and written in the statute in New York State. It's the penal law. Under certain federal crimes, it's under the United States Code. Okay? Now, the codifications of the common law are codified holdings. And it's maintain those elements. They've been amended over the years to provide for nuances between individual crimes. And we also prescribe under the criminal procedure law, as well as under substantive law, what are the defenses and what are the punishments within that. Now, criminal law and property law have a long interaction between each other. That's one of the reasons why we cover it in this course, is because of the fact that criminal law and property law travel together. Many crimes involve property. So you have a scenario where you have property being stolen or property being damaged. And as a result, the criminal law and property law have long had a relationship. The inherent nature of property rights and their value to our society has driven much of the criminal law, and vice versa. It goes back to that old statement of Jeremy Bentham, that the law and property are interrelated, they're intertwined, right? Okay. What's the purpose of the criminal law? The purpose of the criminal law is very straightforward. It's to prevent future crimes, first and foremost. And how does it do that? It inflicts punishment on those who have already done the harm, and it threatens with punishment those who are tempted to commit a similar act. So it is both punishment for the crime, for committing that act, and deterrence of others and of the person who committed the crime by saying, if you do this, you're going to get that punishment. The harm of the criminal law can vary. It can be physical harm. You can actually do damage to an individual person through bodily injury or death. You can lose or damage property. It's an issue of immorality. It's a danger to government or its institutions. It's a disturbance of public peace or safety or order. And it can be an injury of public health. Conduct that threatens to cause but not has yet caused a harmful result may also be enough to constitute a crime. Those are crimes like conspiracy you're planning a crime. That can be a crime in and of itself. The criminal law often strives to avoid harm because part of it, of course, is deterrence by forbidding conduct that may lead to harmful results. Now, we talked about this briefly, but there is criminal law and there's civil law. The criminal law provides for punishment for criminal acts, but civil law also provides for punishment of harmful acts as well. The criminal law are called crimes. The civil acts are called torts. And each type of law, both the civil law and the criminal law, have different responses, but they cover similar conduct. A person who is injured by the action of another may bring a civil lawsuit as well as have that person who commits that act charged with a crime. It depends on what conduct it is. If the victim prevails in that civil lawsuit, they can receive monetary damages for compensation of the harm. They can also get an injunction to say, stop doing that, stop harming them. Whereas under the criminal prosecutions, which have a higher threshold because a civil lawsuit, you only have to prove by what is known as the preponderance of the evidence, which means it's more likely than not that the person did it. Now, under a criminal prosecution, however, it's a higher standard. Why? That person's going to be punished not just possibly with monetary loss or damages, but they're also going to be possibly charged with a crime under a criminal prosecution that carries punishment, incarceration, or even possibly death. So as a result of this, you have under the criminal law a reasonable doubt standard that you have to prove your level of proof is not the preponderance of evidence, but it's beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a much higher threshold to prove in order to give someone incarceration or death. So under the criminal law, a person who acts in a way that is considered harmful to society is prosecuted under those standards, under that reasonable or not standard beyond a reasonable doubt. If an individual is convicted and they're found guilty of the crime, they'll be punished under the criminal law. They'll be given that a fine or imprisonment or death or all of them. Many crimes, as we said, are also torts. You can choose your remedy or get both, but not all of them are. A civil remedy is the tort. The criminal remedy is the crime. We're going to move on next time into further areas of criminal law, and it is an important area of the law. Hope we're going to see you shortly.